in my traditional medical education, I was taught to poo-poo a lot of things like vitamin therapy, herbal therapy. I was really well-educated to put such therapies down without even looking into their benefits and possible risks and possible adverse effects. It was just declared to be nonsense, unorthodox, quackery. Well, you know, in my independent studies, and it really did happen that way, you know, as searching through the medical journals, what I found was that many of the therapies that I had discounted, because that's what I was taught to do, turned out to be quite worthwhile. And I've started recommending such things along the way, and I want to tell you, I got a long way to go, but I'm interested in progressing as fast as possible if it's the right direction, and it seems to be so far. I'm learning to use a lot of things as second-line therapy, just like I learned in medical school how to use drugs as second-line therapy, such as penicillin, such as antacids, such as laxatives. I learned how to use those as second-line therapy. Of course, what you want to do, of course, is take care of the diet and lifestyle issues so that you don't get into the problems, or as in the case of intestinal problems, so you correct the problem by correcting the cause, the bad diet. And then you use second-line therapies. Well, there's a whole group of second-line therapies that, as I say, I always taught to ignore. And fortunately, my consciousness is coming into understanding these. And it is. It's straight through the scientific medical journals. I pick up the Lancet, the British Medical Journal, and so on, and I find discussions on using various vitamin and herbal products. And so by that mechanism, through traditional science, through reading the literature, I've become quite interested in the subject, and so I'm very pleased today that I get to have, on this show, a member of Britain's National Institute of Medical Herbalists since 1979, the past president of the American Herbalists Guild, a man who we had on here before, who hopefully brought a bit of controversy and also a lot of interest to this show. I'd like to welcome back to the show the author of An Elder's Herbal Natural Techniques. An Elder's Herbal. I guess that's the total name of the book. David Hoffman. Good to have you back on the show, David.
Good to be back.
How'd you come out with the title? I guess it doesn't set with me easily.
Yeah,
am I missing part of it?
No. The use of the word is probably more English than it is American. It's an attempt to acknowledge that the aging process is a meaningful process. It's not something that should just lead to a dead end in people's lives. So the use of the word elder in the book and in the title is acknowledgement of the wisdom of age. So this is not me saying that I'm an elder. This is saying that people who are
older.
Elders, this book is for them.
Oh, okay, for older people. But herbs aren't just for older people. They're for young, and they're for old, and they're for everybody in between. David Hoffman is my guest. He's an herbalist. Deals with drugs, natural drugs. And as I mentioned, second-line therapies in my approach and my attitude toward this thing. And I would think David Hoffman would agree that good diet and lifestyle is where you start.
Oh, yes. Yes, I totally agree that the use of herbs and other things that you're calling second-line therapies, it really is secondary to lifestyle, to diet, to how we live our lives, what our thoughts are, what our relationships are like. So very definitely it's secondary to.
And these things are necessary because somehow or another, at least I don't have all the answers, and I don't know anybody who does, so you have to start looking at, instead of primary issues, you have to start looking at secondary approaches. Any examples? You know, I've told you that I learned a lot in the medical literature. Can you think of any offhand that have caught the attention of the medical literature in terms of herbal treatments?
Many. There's one that is currently attracting a lot of interest coming out of two hospitals in London, papers published in The Lancet and the British Journal of Dermatology. Initially, it was a study looking at the way Chinese herbal formulas can help alleviate eczema in children, because the orthodox approach basically comes down to steroids. So there are some other ways of doing it, but it's basically cortisone treatment in severe eczema. And a couple of doctors at the Great Ormond Street Hospital in London, which is the primary children's hospital, were observing that patients of theirs who'd been seeing a local herbalist were actually improving. Now, there's a tendency in European allopathic circles to respond to stuff like that, to see if there is anything to it, rather than just reject it out of hand. So they did clinical trials, double-blind controlled experiments, good science, and showed very clearly that the response, the improvement rates were up in the 80% mark, which just blew away the results that they were getting with their steroid treatment. They then repeated the similar thing with adults about a year later and got, if anything, better results. This has led to a whole upswing of interest and also reaction against herbs. If you read all the letters going backwards and forwards in the journals, there's one bit of worry that is coming up about the possibility of liver damage due to the herbs. But if you read behind that, the people who are raising those issues are the clinicians and the people teaching the medical schools who've got a lot of intellectual investment in the use of steroids. And they're starting to raise red flags about the dangers of herbs.
To justify their own therapy.
Exactly.
And it's not even, it's more ego than economics, isn't it?
Oh,
you know, this is the way I've always done it, so why in the world could I have been wrong? You know, it's the same thing with some of the surgical treatments, like mutilation therapy for breast cancer,
exactly.
Which is, you know, they don't want to admit that they've been unnecessarily amputating breasts for the last 100 years. And so they try and figure out ways to justify what they did, even though it's obviously wrong. That's terrible.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't be so hard for people to make this step. I don't mean lay people. I mean doctor-type people or pharmacy-type people, because some of our best drugs actually are herbs. And I just want to mention a couple, and I want you to fill in, is digoxin, which is the best heart drug I know, from the foxglove plant, and aspirin coming from willow bark.
Yeah, and Metasweet. It's actually the raw material for that is one of the commonest things in shrubs and trees. It's very, very common throughout the plant world.
The only effective treatment that I know of for impotence is yohimbine, which comes from an East African tree.
Yes.
And then we have, vincristine from periwinkle?
Well, it's the Madagascan periwinkle. It's not the local periwinkle, but still, yes.
I'm just a regular old doctor. I'm doing pretty good.
The last figures I saw were that 25% of all prescription drugs are still based on things which are extracted from plants, and about 70% of all prescription drugs have their historical roots in plant material, though they're now synthesized entirely. So the study of plant pharmacology and the interaction with human pharmacology is still the core and maybe even the cutting edge of drug-based medicine. And you've got to remember that the word drug, its etymological roots, is the medieval Dutch for dried plant.
Oh, okay. That learned something new again today. The thing is, I bet, you know, it'd just be my guess from what I've seen in the business, is that if we went back and we further qualified how many drugs are from plant products, and we added to that qualification effective drugs with, and when I mean effective, I mean doing a good job with the least side effects and the least cost. When you overall looked at the benefit, I bet herbal drugs would even shine greater as far as their benefits in terms of regular drug therapy. I don't know whether I want to get into the politics and the problems you've gotten into yet. I think what we'd like to do is get to the callers, so let me invite the callers in, because they'll have questions about various problems they have, and I want you to be able to respond as to what kind of treatment an herbalist would use. And I understand that you're not licensed in the state, and that's something that concerns me, that somebody like yourself has those particular problems.
There is one point I would like to make, though, about the way doctors and nurses and licensed practitioners in the orthodox field are starting to look at the use of herbs. In Germany now, anybody who's completing an MD training has to do 2 semesters of phytotherapy before they can qualify. It's really only in America that, of all the Western countries, that the use of medicinal plants in practice is ignored. It's becoming a core component of family health care in Europe. The drugs and surgery is kept for more emergency situations rather than the immediate thing that you do. There are gentler approaches, which of course you know about. We know about people listening to this program, but that comes as a surprise to many of the people in the medical school.
Well, it comes as a surprise to many of the people who are listening that such a thing would happen, but those people who study the history of the United States in world medicine will realize this is typical. We respond based upon the interest of the pharmaceutical industries. A good example is the World Health Organization policy on breast milk substitutes, which was supported by every single country except for one, And only one country said that we cannot support limiting the pharmaceuticals' abilities to advertise formulas, breast milk substitutes, to underprivileged countries, even though we know that this results in 1 million deaths a year. And it was only the United States that dissented from the World Health Organization policy that would have limited, limited the advertising practices of the drug industries to sell formula that kills children. Well, you know, I find it very consistent with what's going on. And Elder's Herbal is the book. It's a practical book. It's a book that'll help you with herbal medicines and second-line medicines. And these are potent medicines. Potent in the sense of their effects. Also, some have adverse effects, so you certainly want to read the indications and the prescriptions carefully so that it's used properly so you don't get yourself into problems, because occasionally somebody does get in trouble with herbs. Isn't that true?
Oh, yeah. But it's not occasionally, unfortunately. It's very common.
These are potent medicines.
Oh, yes. And what I've done in this book is really taken into account the needs of the aging process, which is to have lower dosages and focus more on tonic herbs rather than strong, well, in herbal language are called strong effectives. So it's relatively easy to include herbs in somebody's lifestyle to nurture the specific needs of aging. Let me just mention one or two of them, which are totally safe, no toxicity, and basically you can relate to them as foods. The most important one is probably hawthorn berries, which can be used in jam or as tea or as tinctures, any form you like. The main thing it does is very gently and mildly dilate the coronary arteries. Secondarily, it increases the strength of heartbeat of the heart without it doing it the way that foxglove does, so you don't have any of those problems. And the German government have printed an official monograph saying that hawthorn, Crataegus, which is the Latin name for it, is the primary drug of choice for heart failure in the elderly when it's not life-threatening. The idea of the American cardiologist suggesting that is a bit surreal, but they should. It's very safe, no contraindications. It doesn't synergize negatively with any drugs anybody would be taking for those sorts of conditions. So that's the first one. Second one would be ginkgo.
I hear a lot about that. I don't know much about it.
It's interesting because the usage of it now, the indications come from science. This is not a traditional
use. The Lancet had a recent article on ginkgo.
I did a bibliography recently from peer-reviewed journals, and there's well over 250 clinical papers. Most of them are in French or Italian, so they haven't can read the abstracts. The main thing it does is reduce platelet stickiness.
Kind of like aspirin?
Yes, but safely.
Okay.
And that, again, a completely non-toxic plant. But interestingly, it increases oxygen availability to the brain, across the blood-brain barrier. And the main way it's being used in France now, in geriatrics, is at the very, very first sign of dementias. It's not a cure or a treatment for Alzheimer's, but it seems to facilitate the delaying or the slowing down of the onset of all the symptoms. Lots of statistics to show it's valid to be used. It's in all the PDRs of equivalent to the PDR in Europe. Still not being used by medical professionals here. Then there's milk thistle, the seeds of milk thistle, which they protect liver cells from the damage of chemicals and the deprivations of our diet and our lifestyle. Again, another very safe, non-toxic plant. The three of those can be got hold of really very cheaply from the herb stores. You don't need to buy expensive formulations with them. You can buy them as the dried herb.
Isn't the government going to fix that, though? I mean, isn't the FDA working hard to make sure that we can't get these products?
Yes, they are. And the big issue is why they're doing it and what science they're basing it on. They've actually said, one of the latest really crazy things they're doing, that no one can make claims that prunes are laxative because there's no scientific evidence. So there's a big push to get a conference together where all the heads of the FDA are invited, and we all lock ourselves into the conference hall and just have prunes for the weekend and see if they will then say that there's no laxative effects.
Well, that would be quite an interesting experience, especially if you lock the doors and don't let anybody out of the room.
Yeah.
You're not going to allow them access to any of the outside facilities.
No.
Okay, good.
We've got plans.
All right, great. Let's talk to Virginia in Sebastopol. Hello, Virginia.
Hi, Dr. McDougall. I've been on your diet now for 6 weeks, and with the exception of only 2 or 3 days that I've had normal BMs, it's been persistence of loose stools. And I've been cooking all my vegetables and fruits and cooking cereals and avoiding all fiber foods, and yet this is still persisting. So my question is, what can I prepare to completely counteract that? Is there
I'm gonna first of all give you a quick answer, and I'm going to defer this to David Hoffman. First of all, you have to understand, on this kind of diet, normal bowel function is 1 to 3 large unformed stools a day. Unformed.
Unformed.
Unformed. That's normal. See, you're used to this little squishy tube that comes out on the American diet, and so it this may be just new to you, but this is what is normal.
Well, right now I'm having like about eight or more a day, and they're just kind of so much gas with it and everything.
Well, it sounds like you're having a malabsorption problem. And from a food point of view, you need to eliminate things like wheat, barley, rye, other gluten products, and you may even have to go to the elimination diet to sort out what's giving you the difficulty. But how would you approach this from a herbal point of view?
Right, there are lots of herbs which might help here, but they'd be in addition to what you just said about the dietary issues. The most important herb here is one called meadowsweet that has the effect of increasing absorption when there is a some degree of malabsorption going on, but it won't reverse the gluten reaction. But more importantly, it reduces diarrhea and does firm up stools. If there's a lot of gas or flatulence as well, it'd be worth combining that with chamomile or lemon balm or peppermint. The choice between those three is simply one of aesthetics, what the person likes drinking. Now, if that combination doesn't do the job, you can go up in strength. Now, you can go up very, very strong, but that is really inappropriate, because then you swing to constipation and the whole insides gets confused. The appropriate step up would be to a herb called Cranesbill, which is available in all the herb stores, and this lady in Sebastopol has got access to one of the best in the country, and Rosemary's Garden is there.
That's an herbal store in Sebastopol, Rosemary's Garden. And how about the next step to opioids?
Herbalists don't use those.
You don't use opium derivatives?
No.
Okay. How about charcoal for gas? Do you use those kinds of things, or is
that you can do. That you can do. But the herbal approach it would be to use plants which contain volatile oils, which are anti-inflammatory to reduce any inflammatory response in the mucosa, and also antispasmodic, so it eases any cramping around it. So rather than trying to absorb the gas that's already been produced into the charcoal, the herbal approach is to try and change the way in which the body is backfiring, so to speak. So you change the production of the gas.
Is this all described in an elder's herbal?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah. An elder's herbal, you can get it at the bookstore, and the author is David Hoffman. How about, is there a number of people can call if they can't find it in the bookstore? Probably not.
No.
But the bookstores can get them.
Oh, they've got them.
They've got them.
But one other point. This book it really focuses on dosages and herbs that are appropriate for people in later life. If people want a book to guide them in general,
yes.
I've written another one called The New Holistic Herbal.
The New Holistic Herbal.
It used to be called The Holistic Herbal, and then the publisher wanted to do a new book launch. I didn't change the title.
And the contents are basically the same.
Yes, but there you get more herbs talked about, and the dosage is appropriate for adults rather than...
And that's in the bookstore
also. Yes, it is.
Okay,
it
but
is.
The name to remember is David Hoffman, and David Hoffman is my guest today. He is an herbalist, and he practices herbal medicine, or it has in the past. I don't know how he gets away with it in the state of California, because you're not...
I'm not in practice, exactly for the legal reasons.
Yes.
I've decided that it's more appropriate for me at the moment to be involved in writing and education to get the word out rather than focusing on...
Yeah, but as I said before, that's unfortunate.
Yes.
Here's an opportunity for people to see somebody such as yourself who has certainly an expertise and I don't know what you have to meet to meet the state criteria. I think you have to get an acupuncturist degree or a chiropractor's degree, something like that, to practice herbal medicine in the state,
well,
right?
In Sonoma, yes. But in Sonoma County, Sonoma and Marin County, there's quite a number now of MDs and nurse practitioners who they're not making a big issue of it, but they're doing herbal medicine. People have gone through my training and the training of other, you know, skilled herbalists. So the herbs are being put into the context of their license.
So you have to have kind of a standard medical ticket, and then you're allowed to practice herbal medicine. That's the way it's set up. And how about Chinese herbalists? You know, when I lived in Hawaii, you could go downtown Honolulu, and I imagine you could do this in San Francisco, too. And there's herbal shops.
Oh, yeah.
And how do these folks get away with what they do?
They're left alone.
Just nobody bothers them.
It's the thing that causes the legal problems is if people make outrageous claims, which herbalists tend not to do, or they start making too much money.
Which our herbalists don't tend to do.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I got it. Let's talk to Yvonne in Lakeport. Yvonne, you're on with David Hoffman.
I was wondering if there's any herbal remedies for either osteoporosis or osteoarthritis.
Yes, there are, but it's not a remedy for those conditions. There are herbal approaches to those conditions. So
I can hardly hear you.
Why don't you hang up and let him answer? You can listen on the radio, okay?
Oh, okay.
All
thank
right.
You.
All right. So if you use herbs within the context of appropriate diet and lifestyle changes, they can be quite effective. But looking for the herb or the product for arthritis or osteoporosis, it won't work. You may get a reduction in pain or discomfort, but that's not the same as actually reversing the processes going on. Let's talk about osteoarthritis because there are less issues to talk about. Herbs that you can use effectively here that are safe to use include natural anti-inflammatories which don't have the associated problems of the drugs. Now, I've already mentioned meadowsweet today, but other ones would be willow bark and then wild yam, which is more effective in rheumatoid arthritis, but you can use it in osteo as well. And in addition to that, you want things which are known as anti-rheumatics, which is a meaningless term, but it describes the general context. If you can find a herb called bog bean, or sometimes called buck bean, that's B-U-C-K-B-E-A-N, that can be very effective over a few months. An alternative to that would be devil's claw, and then an alternative to both of those would be black cohosh.
And all of these can be found in your books, which one is called An Elder's Herbal, and the other is?
The New Holistic Herbal. In fact, the Elder's Herbal really does look at arthritis a lot.
Looks at it because it's more of a problem of older people. And let's go back to our callers. Nadine from Reading. Hello, Nadine.
Hi. Appreciate your guest today, and thank you very much. I have read John Lust, the herb book, and I was wondering, he talked about making drops from the passion fruit for nerves, people
yes.
with bad nerves.
Yes.
And I was wondering, could you tell me how soon a person should pick the plant and start drying it, and how long it has to be dried?
Yes. Well, first off, it's not the passion fruit. It's the...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Can we have you just hang up and listen on the phone, on the radio, please?
All right. It's not the passion fruit. It's the flower of the passion flower plant. So you have to use the flower rather than the fruit. And I'm afraid it's a really specific species. And as far as I'm aware, it doesn't grow very well in California. It thrives in the southeast. So it may be more appropriate for you to buy it dried or buy the tincture and use it ready-made. But if making your own tincture is very, very, very simple. All you have to do is dry the plant, dry the part of the plant you're going to use. Look up in a book what sort of ratio of alcohol to water that you need, and then just pour that liquid onto the dried plant in a closed glass container. Keep it out of direct sunlight for 2 weeks. Shake it every day so it all stirs up. And at the end of 2 weeks, you either just pour off the liquid, or sometimes you have to press the herb so you get more of the liquid out. But it's very, very, very simple.
And of course, this doesn't cause any adverse effects. Somebody can do this at home safely, as far as you know.
With passion flower, it's totally safe.
Totally safe. But before we get to our callers, I want to ask something that I think is on a lot of people's minds. And that is there an herbal approach to postmenopausal symptoms? And when I ask you that question, what I have in mind is the Mexican yam.
Yes. There are many herbal approaches, and they can be very effective. But the problem, there's a lot of misunderstanding around the wild yam, either the Mexican yam or the wild yam from the southeast, Dioscorea mexicana or villosa. In the pharmaceutical industry, there's a chemical extracted called diastgenin, which is messed around with chemically and is converted into sex hormones, many different ones depending on what process is done. In the human body, though, there aren't the enzyme systems to convert that building block in diastgenin into estrogen or progesterone. It's converted into one of the anti-inflammatory group of natural cortisone-type chemicals in the body. So wild yam in humans taken directly has an anti-inflammatory effect and is used, an antispasmodic effect, used in arthritis and diverticulitis, those sorts of conditions. It has very, very little effect on the hormone systems. The herb to think of primarily is called chaste berry. And it has that name for historical reasons, for the way monks in Greek Orthodox monasteries used it.
Oh.
It makes men chaste. It has no effect like that on women.
Because it has an estrogen type of an effect.
Yes. Yeah, well, it actually can go both ways, depending on the need, progesterone or
estrogen. Well, will it keep, let me just be real specific. Will chaste berry, will it keep a woman from having the hot flashes?
Yes.
Will it keep the vaginal tissues thick and her sexual functions past the time of usual dryness and discomfort that she has?
It will definitely, it takes about 2 to 3 months before it's really working, and you have to stay on it long term through the whole process.
But is it through estrogen that it works? Is it an estrogen-like stimulation?
Yes.
Same type of...
It's working on the pituitary, which then leads to a whole bunch of appropriate
biochemical... Safe?
Yes, very safe. And it works very well with the hot flush group of symptoms. It works mediumly well on the tissue changes. So you have to use other things as well to really focus on the specific manifestation.
Is that described in the book,
yes,
in Elder's Herbal?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Now, just so I'm not accused of being unfair, how about the concern of men at this particular time in life? In other words, they would like to have their sexual interest and abilities increased. I mean, that after all, the aphrodisiac is one of those things that people really would like to hear more about.
Yes. Now, Vitex is completely inappropriate in men because it will have the opposite effect to the one that is wanted.
The chaste berry.
Yes. Chaste berry, the Latin name is Vitex.
Okay, don't confuse me now. I'm just a doctor.
Sorry, yes. For men, it's not as clear-cut that there are herbs which have direct stimulant effect that way. For example, you mentioned yohimbe earlier.
Yeah, yohimbe, which, by the way, the drug companies sell as yokan and other things.
Yeah,
so it's
really
good herb.
It's available in prescription. But that doesn't work hormonally. What it's doing is working on the blood circulation of that part of the body. So the herbs which have reputations for having hormonal stimulating, promoting effect in men are Damiana, Sarsaparilla, and maybe yucca. Now, but it's really questionable whether they work. They work very well in people who are very emaciated and exhausted. They really do nurture and a lot of functions come back. But if people are in a normal process and they just want to amplify it,
we'd like to be like we were when we were 20.
Yeah. I wouldn't say there's anything that really works.
Huh. That's too bad.
Yeah. However, the herb industry...
End of the show. Let's go on to the next guest.
The herb industry would really like everybody to think there is. And, and you can go into all the supplement stores and see these herbal alternatives to anabolic steroids and testosteronal stimulants. And it's basically a ripoff.
Well, when you mentioned sarsaparilla, are we thinking of sassafras?
No, sassafras is a different plant.
Okay. One that is liver toxic?
The oil of sassafras.
The oil of sassafras
is hepatotoxic. But the plant itself, which has very, very little oil in what you drink, there's no cases of liver damage. The oil in the lab has been shown to be Liver toxic.
Okay. Well, because that's one that's always thrown up. It's the reason you shouldn't dabble in herbs is because of the toxic effects on the liver from sassafras.
Yeah, but doing the same experiments, you would have to throw out 50% of what people buy normally in the stores to eat. What happens is constituents are concentrated, put in very high dosages into rats and laboratory animals. Mm-hmm. They find toxic effects, and then those results are used as a used for political ends to control the herb industry so that the drug companies carry on with their profits.
Okay. One other question before we get back to the callers. Larry King advertises Ginsana.
Yep.
I mean, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about something that you do well by buying Ginsana, or should you go back to the original preparation?
I would always take the position that nature does not need us to be healthy through herbs via manufacturing processes. If Ginsana was the only way to get the benefits of ginseng, then what were the Chinese doing for thousands of years before this company came out? So I would always use the herb itself rather than a processed form of it.
And what would ginseng do for people? Because it's always talked about. I mean, it seemed to be that
there's what it will do normally, and then what it will do in very special cases where you take very high quality. Now, normally it has a direct impact on the stress response mediated by the adrenals and pituitary, and it's called an adaptogenic effect. It helps people deal with the long-term impact of stress. It helps people endure stress, which leads to a lot of specific indications, but really it's an adrenal support. The reputation that ginseng has, you know, the longevity herb and all of that stuff, may well be the case with the very, very best quality ginseng. But unless you own oil wells, you cannot afford the best quality ginseng. If it's a form of ginseng, either tablets or whole root or whatever, that ordinary people can afford, then you won't achieve the results that they talk about in the more outlandish ads and books. It's a good tonic herb for people under stress, and that's all of us.
Okay. Let's talk to Elaine in San Francisco. Elaine?
Yes, Dr. McDougall. I hope you had an enjoyable vacation.
Well, it was work and vacation. I don't know how to vacation.
I believe my question was answered, but I just didn't want to hang up. The question being, what can Mr. Hoffman suggest for a woman with bone loss and whose physician is slightly pressuring for estrogen and progestin? But I believe you've
covered that in pretty good detail.
I would just say that Vitex, sorry, I keep using the Latin name, chasteberry, is the core of a treatment for osteoporosis, because there we have to focus on the hormonal issues and not really focus on the bone issues when it comes to the herbs. That's done in other ways. But it's a complex problem that herbs can help with, and I'd recommend referring to one of the books on that, such as mine.
And the sad thing is you cannot refer back to your doctor. I mean, if you went in to your doctor with your book and said, look, here's some preparations on how to deal with my problem from an herbal point of view, the doctor would dismiss it immediately. I mean, and there's nothing else that the doctor could do, except it's got to be a bunch of baloney, because if they didn't teach it to me in medical school, how could it be important? If I don't know it, it can't be worthwhile.
Yes.
So don't even waste your time. And if you decide that this is an approach that you're going to take, and you purchase the books and decide that you're going to add this approach to your particular health picture, the only thing I'm concerned about is these are potent medicines, and I would really like it to be a situation, David Hoffman, where people could get some guidance from a professional like you, so that they would not only avoid side effects, which seem to be rather modest or mild, but they'd also get the benefits, which are, I believe, there, the first time without a lot of experimenting. And how would somebody go about finding an herbalist?
There's an organization called the American Herbalist Guild. And maybe I don't have their phone number with me, but I can give you the address. If people write to them, they can get a listing of well-qualified, well-experienced herbal practitioners.
Okay, give the address, but it's also in the book.
Yes, it is. It's the American Herbalist Guild, Post Office Box 1683 in the town of Soquel. My English accent, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Soquel. California 95073.
And Elders Herbal, this is Dr. John McDougall. David Hoffman, thank you. It's just a great pleasure to be with you.